welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 476. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Of course, as always.
As always. And we are here on this week of not an awful lot of news, but quite a lot of new releases. And we're going to be, well, I'm going to be celebrating from a distance Rick's birthday on Sunday. Happy birthday, Rick.
Thank you.
That sounded quite meek. thanks.
What? I don't like people knowing about my birthday, really.
Well, just sort of... I've just blown that gaffe all over the internet, mate. Sorry, we won't say how old you are or how. What's your default answer when people ask you how old you are? Do you have a thing?
I usually tell them the truth.
Really?
I'm very open. I'm going to be 26 on Sunday.
Oh wow, that's. I suppose you're still in that bracket where it is okay to say how old you are. I think for some people they get a bit self-conscious once they hit a certain number.
No, I am still very young. And I'm not afraid to flaunt that around.
Ah, good. Well, our readers are probably in that demographic. I think my default answer, if anybody asks me, you know how some people really resist it and get quite like, I don't want it. And it's like, you just say, I'm younger than most mountains, but older than some books. And they go, all right. And then they didn't really want to talk to you after that. So it serves as a quite nice two birds, one stone sort of thing.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I'm going to steal that for future conversations that I don't want to have.
Exactly. That's a freebie. They're like, oh, instantly sorry I asked. Anyway, I've got to go now. Perfect. Anyway, how's about some of that news and new game business? We have got info about PUBG and Resident Evil 2's live crossover. We've got information about Reggie from Nintendo and his successor. We've got potential information about the once dead Platinum game, Xbox exclusive, maybe being revived on the Switch, and a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Shikondo, Immortal Rogue, Pushpipe Paradise, Spicy Piggy, Boost Buddies, and more. But first, the news. Resident Evil 2 came out, it's got to be like 3-4 weeks now, I suppose. Did you get on board with it? Did you have a go at the new Resi?
I didn't. I played the demo.
Okay.
The like 30-minute, like one-shot demo thing, and it felt lovely.
Mm.
It felt very Resi 4, which, as we all know, is the best in the series. Mixed slightly with Resi 7's graphics and UI and interface and stuff like that.
I played the first, like, 45 minutes. I've got it. I got it free as part of getting the new graphics card for this work PC. Very nice, and I'm looking forward to playing more when I have a second to myself. But as if it needed any further love, because it's been very, very well received, it's getting yet more promo action in this PUBG crossover thing. So if you're playing PUBG over... I guess this is sticking around for a while. I don't know if there's a time limit on it all. But you're going to be able to parachute onto an island which is full of bloody zombies. There'll also be people there too. So according to your news story you've written here, it's going to be dropped down to 60 players in total, I guess. Yep. And then they spawn a bunch of zombies to go with it.
Yep, that's about the long and short of it.
Nice.
Plus all the boss zombies as well, so you'll be chased by the Tyrant, who is also known as Mr. X.
Yes.
In the remake, and G Stage 1, which I don't understand, but I'm sure means something to somebody.
I don't remember him. I have played Resi 2 back in the original one on the PlayStation, but I can't remember the names.
I think it's like William Birkin or something.
Oh, okay.
It's like the first strain of the G virus, and it's the guy who infects himself with that. If I remember my magazine reading of the late 90s well.
Your lore. The Tyrant's become something of a meme now, the new Tyrant. Like,
yes.
Just him, like, sticking his head round a door with a hat on. Hello. That's kind of his vibe.
There's a fantastic mod that someone's made which just strips him down to a thong, which is classic internet. Has got to immediately try and make evil sexy.
They don't have to work hard now. Well, in this era of all criminals and narratives having to have some kind of redemption arc where eventually they become the good guy, perhaps there's a mod, perhaps you'll be able to play as the Tyrant, where he turns around and...
That wouldn't surprise me. The amount of modding that's got into Resident Evil 2, going completely off topic, is really sort of incredible to me, because people are trying so desperately to make the remake of Resident Evil 2 as much like the original Resident Evil 2 as possible.
I've seen this. So it's like, hey, we're going to replace all the graphics. They've got the original. I think actually Capcom themselves are doing this, where they're, they've put out the original like skins for the characters, so you could do that. But also it's like, we're going to do the fixed camera position, like the old game.
Like, why? Why?
It's like, yeah, we're going to... But could you just... I mean, just play the old one, I guess? But I don't know. A demake, I suppose it's called, isn't it? But speaking of skins... In this PUBG crossover thing, apparently you'll be able to win new ones that make you look like Leon and or Claire, plus Ada and Marvin as well, if you're familiar with those characters. I suspect it's just a short-term thing.
They don't really say how long it's going to last, which was kind of annoying. But I guess it's a big thing, so it'll be at least a couple of weeks, maybe a month. But I won't expect it to be like forever.
No. Yeah. It could be a timed thing. So if you do want to shoot up more zombies in your PUBG Island map, then you can go and log in right now. It's obviously all free and all that jazz. Now then, moving over to Switch for a moment, we got the news this year that after 13 years of long service, Reggie!
Wrong part of the name to be putting weird accents on.
Because we were debating the pronunciation of the surname. So you're saying Filsame?
Filsame.
Okay, Filsame.
Yes.
See, all I'm thinking of now is Event Horizon, the Latin Liberate Tutime. Since save yourselves. Oh, we didn't hear it. Oh, Jason Isaacs, no!
No!
And death. Watch Event Horizon, kids. It's good. So he's been president and COO of Nintendo of America for over a decade now, and has seen us through, oh God, like the Wii and the Wii U and Switch now, and like 13 years ago, where were we at? Was he there for the GameCube?
No, I don't think so.
Before his time.
So 2006 was the Wii, wasn't it? That was when it...
Was it? Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. So he would have gone through those last three generations of the consoles, plus a whole bunch of 3DSs and DSs in the meantime. And he has now announced that he's stepping down. I think people have generally quite liked him.
He's always seemed like a very nice and charismatic dude.
For a big, extremely wealthy CEO overall.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when he sort of appears in videos and on stage and stuff and does little bits. Like, there was the bit where he challenged, like, a competitive Smash Bros. Player once.
Oh, yeah.
And lost massively.
Well, yes.
But was still sort of, like, upbeat and jovial and charismatic and stuff. And it's just... I've heard people as well have, like, accidentally bumped into him at E3 and just stood chatting to him and not even, like, knew who he was until afterwards, where they go, hang on a minute, that was Reggie.
Yeah,
and he's just apparently just a very nice, normal man. It'll be a real shame to see him go, because he's just been kind of the nice, Western-facing face of Nintendo that is otherwise missing.
Well, they do quite well at choosing people who... sort of put a smiley, warm feel on their presentation style.
Because
the problem with all of the chief officers and the folks who come out at E3 and all the big talks and, you know, the guys in charge of all the big companies is they have that, well, hello, fellow kids vibe to them, where it's just like a jacket, shirt, jeans tucked in.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of, oh, I'm slightly cash, but I'm also in power and I'm down with the kids. And Nintendo of Japan have their guys who are all just like were coders themselves and all of that.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, you do maybe know what you're talking about and you're kind of cool. And, you know, Miyamoto's got a big smiley face on him. And I don't think the West is quite as good as putting nice, smiley, warm characteristics onto their business front.
No, that's why Reggie is so enjoyed and revered.
Yeah.
And also because when he joined, the first thing he said, he was going to kick ass and take names.
He did.
And that is like the most un-Nintendo thing you could possibly say.
Mm.
And I think we all still respect him a lot for that.
Well, he's stepping down, but taking his place was a man who we've heard of before, and he has appeared on stage at their own conferences and bits and bobs. Bowser's taking over. Doug Bowser!
Bowser? But that's the name of the villain from the Mario series. How could this have happened?
How incredibly fitting. I bet this won't get mentioned in any news headlines.
No one's going to pick up on that.
Nah.
It's just a nice little detail of an otherwise very successful businessman who has worked at EA and has been with Nintendo for the past 3 years, maybe longer.
Hmm. So he was a VP of like sales and marketing?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And then he was EA, which has less, let's be honest, of a cuddly front-facing reputation. This is what I mean when I say like people go, Reggie, hey! But then if you like go, how about EA? People say, ooh. You can't think of the big cuddly warm face of EA, can you?
Really? No.
I don't know a great deal about Doug other than he has a slightly amusing surname given the context of the role. That's about it.
I'm sure he'll do great. They wouldn't have put him in charge if they didn't expect good things from him.
So look forward to lots and lots of headlines over the next 24 to 48 hours, and then they'll hopefully go away and never come back. Now, speaking of going away and never coming back, Scalebound got cancelled. It was going to be this Microsoft exclusive, and it got, I think it was like 2014?
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's when it was first revealed.
That's right. It was being shown off at E3, and this was a Platinum game that had the trademark bonkers combat. Was it the guy we were talking about last week who blocks everybody?
Yeah, Hideki Kamiya.
That was shown at E3 in 2014. It looked absolutely mental because it was basically some like punk kid who bonds with the dragon and then puts on a bunch of dragon scales and then fights other massive monsters and dragons, all while wearing what looked like Dre Beats headphones.
And people classic Japanese character design has to be wearing over ear headphones no matter what situation they're in.
And so we were like, yep, this looks mental and like potentially fun. It had that goofy, crazy Platinum combat out there look to it. And so we were like, right on. An Xbox exclusive that might be kind of entertaining and a step away from the seriousness of Halo and Gears of War and that lot. And then it got cancelled. Unceremoniously afterwards. We're like, oh. However, there are rumours circulating. We've got this from Nintendo Insider saying that sources reckon that Platinum is currently working on bringing it to the Switch. Now, there is some credibility to this because Platinum's been working quite closely with Nintendo and the Switch, haven't they?
Yeah, Nintendo revived Bayonetta because Platinum have said before that Bayonetta 2 wouldn't have happened without Nintendo.
Mm.
And then there was all sorts of Wii U exclusives, and now they've got Switch exclusives, they've got the ports of Bayonetta 1 and 2, they've got Astral Chain, which was just announced last week. Bayonetta 3 is still in production as well, and that's exclusively for Switch.
Bayonetta 2 was originally a Wii U exclusive, wasn't it? For a bit.
Yes, yeah.
So if anyone was going to be reviving it, it would be them by the sounds of it. They do seem to be big supporters of Platinum and their work, and this is something that I would like to see just because it looked balmy.
Yeah.
And I want games that are weird.
Yeah, I mean, Astral Chain looks plenty weird, so even if it's not true, there's still that. And there's still Bayo 3. And Platinum will always be making games, and all of them will be silly and ridiculous and beautiful.
They churn them out, don't they, Platinum?
They do.
It does feel like they have, I don't know how big their team is or how many teams they have, but they seem to veer between doing their own mad stuff and then like spitting out like licensed stuff. Like, they did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they did the Transformers one that's also quite good.
Just utterly bizarre, just the amount of stuff they actually pump out. And you just think, I don't even know how big they are or where they are based or what. Just, it always feels like kind of a small company.
Wasn't Nier Automata them as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've got their varied output, but they all have this common theme, which is generally third-person combat.
Yeah.
Third-person action combat, and that's what they do incredibly well, as exemplified by the likes of Bayonetta, and that's their rep. So they're able to crowbar that into a lot of different games that all do look and feel quite different, to their credit, given that they are basically doing the same thing. But I still haven't touched Nier Automata, but that, again, the way that that game is structured and the amount of replays you have to do and what it's all about, people get very passionate about that game.
Yeah, you'd love it.
Would I? Because I've been put off by the idea of replaying the same thing over and over and over again.
I mean, it's not that.
No?
No, you don't replay the same thing over and over again. Like, each different playthrough is actually just another story. I believe. I haven't actually got to any of the endings myself because I just don't have the time.
Right.
But I believe that each and every, like, playthrough is basically completely different.
Hmm.
I think you'd enjoy it because it's got, you know, philosophical things.
I feel like I was just called out for being a beard-stroking wanker. How very dare you?
I would never dare to say that, but I will hint at it on a podcast. I am in a really mean mood today, and I don't know why, and I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's nearly your birthday, Rick. You be that bitch. You do you. All right, so we can potentially look forward to Scalebound coming onto the Switch, but as you said, we can definitely look forward to Astral Chain. Did you have a go at this?
I haven't, but it looks lovely. Yeah, I just want it.
All power to Platinum. Hopefully this one will come back, because it did look nuts, and we need more nuts on our consoles. Out and about this week, Immortal Rogue came out on iPhone, iPad. I don't know if it's on Android. Maybe not.
It is on Android.
Is it? Because it's £4/$1.99.
Yep.
That's bold for an Android release. This is, as the title would suggest, a roguelike in which you take control of a hunter vampire character who is scudding about through the aeons of history, hacking folks to death, occasionally turning people into vampires themselves and recruiting them for your squad, and then carrying on until you die, are reborn, and continue to carry on yet more times. It's just 2D, so they've got that thing where all the characters are like laid flat against the ground as you look down on them, if you know what I mean. The way that it controls is quite interesting. So rather than holding on the screen and dragging around with one thumb, for this is a portrait-style game, and you can play it with one hand, you just swipe your thumb, and you kind of dash off in that direction, and then kind of skid to a halt.
Right.
So that's how you move around. It's lots of little choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo as you switch direction and swipe. The reason they do it like this is because you need to tap in order to slash your sword or whatever weapon you happen to be carrying. And then there is also an additional charged attack where you put your thumb on the screen, and then after a second or two, you can drag your thumb out, and it'll show a little targeting like projectile area where this is where I'm going to swipe. And you can release, and then your character will go and zoom forward a few feet and do a big old slash. It's an odd one, this, because the first impressions were not good. But then I played it for about an hour straight, and it's really quite good. I don't know if you played it or not, but Harry...
I've not played it, but Harry loved it.
Yeah, Harry really liked it.
I also managed to get it for the App Army as well. And
oh, nice.
They tend to do things based on their first impressions, and they weren't too keen on the controls either, so I'm interested. It did sound like the kind of thing that you kind of have to master, and then once you get the hang of it, it'll probably turn out pretty good.
Yeah, so he... Like, Harry had the review, and I was, like, doing video capture for it, and my initial thought was like, really? I don't see this. Am I going to have to do one of the occasional rare reviews where I go like, actually, I don't agree with this, and have to voice an alternative opinion? But I just kept playing, and you know what? It is actually quite good. So the way that it works in the roguelike sense is that you're playing over a period of like hundreds of years. So you'll play through a scenario, slash up some things. You choose what you want your character to do at the beginning. You'll be presented with like a narrative option, and it will say like, the Baron is trying to overthrow the peasantry. And then you'll get the options as like, kill the Baron or assist and kill all the peasantry. And those are your choices. You know, okay, I'll choose, I can kill the Baron or something. And then you'll slash up a load of things, and then the Baron will appear at the end, and you have to hunt and kill him. And then that will change the evolution of the world, because it'd be like, ah, well, actually, the Baron was going to invent this cool invention which was going to mechanize the industry in years to come. And now that hasn't happened. So 100 years have passed, and we're now in a kind of new Dark Ages. So suddenly the environments all change, and now you're all out in the forests in the middle of nowhere, and no one's got any weapons anymore. And then you play through that level, and that's another 100 years. And so every time you jump 100 years, like, the environment gradually changes from an agricultural culture to an industrial culture to a technological culture. And so suddenly you start the game playing with, like, swords and that, and then kind of four or five levels in, suddenly everyone's got laser guns and are running around shooting you, and you're fighting robots. Which is quite interesting, and, you know, a novel approach. You'll then get the option to either kill characters or turn some characters. And if you do that, then you can like add them to a roster, and you earn blood. Whenever you hack up some enemies, some of them will occasionally drop blood, and you use those to unlock characters. And these characters, they're not characters you play as. They appear near the beginning of the level, and each of them provides like a different sort of boost. Right. So if you unlock this one lassie, she will provide you with the coins that you dropped last time. She'll be like, here, this is all I could scavenge from your last mission. She gives you a bunch of coins, and then the coins can be used to unlock weapons as you play through. Someone else will be like, I'll look after the bodies and collect armor. And it basically means you can change costume at the beginning of every level. Now, The roguelike bit is when you die, you obviously lose all the weapons you've collected. There are perks that you unlock as you play that you can purchase through each game. But once you die, you lose all the perks as well. But you keep the blood you collect and you gradually use that to unlock more of these characters, which will provide you with little extra things at the beginnings of the levels. And you can also permanently unlock some weapons to give you access to them later. The first impression of it being like, this is a bit jerky and weird and I don't feel like I have any control, went away after about 20 minutes. Mm. And it becomes very fast, because you're always like swiping into a cluster of enemies, tap, tap, tap to do a few swipes, and swiping back again a couple of paces so they don't hit you. You're dodging the swipes they're about to make. Mm. And then you're swishing back in again, maybe holding and timing your powerful attack, which you have to do very carefully, because it's very easy to just sit there like a lemon while you're charging and then get gubbed by someone who steps up. And it becomes a very, very fast-paced, twitchy little game, and it's very easy to get ganked by a whole bunch of them rolling in on you, and then suddenly you're dead and back to the beginning. I don't know, it's quite Moorish. It feels nice, and the fact that the environments continually change in the background is this, like, I wonder where it's going to go next, and suddenly you've got all these different characters that you're fighting. The base gameplay is still the same. You're still bimbling around a city or a map, and it's very small areas. And then a portal opens and you move on to the next 100 years, if you like. So it's simplistic. And as I say, I don't think the first impression is very good. But I do think that there is something underneath it. And I found it very, very playable and kept wanting to come back. It is £5 or $5. Check out Harry's review. There'll be a video review up today or on Monday, one of the two. So you can see it running and then, you know, maybe make your decision from there. But yeah, there's something to this. I think it's really... really quite interesting. So, Immortal Rogue is the name of that one, and it's out right now. What have you been doing Switch-wise, Rick?
I have been playing the big game of the week, which is Steins Gate Elite.
Oh, I saw the review go up. This is one of those ones where I have no idea. I've heard Steins Gate, but I don't even know what it is. What the hell?
So, it was a PS Vita visual novel.
Okay.
In, like, 2015. And it was on Xbox and stuff in Japan in, like, 2013. Eventually came over to the West. Huge, like, translation job because it's just stupid. And then this is, like, a remade version of the original game, but there was an anime adaptation of it a couple of years ago, and they've basically lifted the visuals from the anime and some of, like, the cutscenes and stuff and just sort of jammed them into the game, remixed it slightly so, like, it makes sense within certain contexts that weren't in the anime.
Okay.
And then sort of just jigged it around a bit so that it all kind of fits together and with the new things. And then make some very slight gameplay changes so it's a little bit more accessible to new players.
All right.
So Steins Gate itself is a story of a self-proclaimed mad scientist and his group of weird friends, which steadily grows throughout the game. And they accidentally invent time travel.
It happens.
You know, and then all hell breaks loose and it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder and weirder. It's very, very, very detailed pseudoscience, like, to try and explain how this might actually work. So if you don't like reading just huge, endless piles of, like, really detailed scientific terminology, probably not the game for you. Okay. But sort of the other storyline bits are interesting, and the way it sort of changes things and how time actually works and how things go throughout the game is kind of interesting, and some of the dialogue's quite funny. It is a bit sexual assaulty at times, you know, you have to look out for that stuff.
You shock me.
But overall, I think it's really interesting, really clever, really bizarre game. Okay. I'm not a fan of the new visuals, because in anime there's a lot of times where, you know, to save money and cut corners and stuff like that, there will just be some very basic drawings in the background. Mm. And when you're waiting to sort of progress to the next line of dialogue, you're just sat on a static frame of the anime. And if you look too closely, you can start to see the parts where sort of people have rushed to get it done as quickly as possible, which is fair enough.
If they've updated the game with the anime for this new version, what did the old version look like?
The old version is very classic visual novel, so it's just static 2D images that appear and then they change emotions based on what they're saying.
Right, okay.
And then static backgrounds. This is very much there's lots of different camera angles, there's lots of different animations going on, people's mouths move as they speak, that kind of thing. So it is a lot more interesting to look at visually, and I think if you were playing it in kind of an auto mode, then it would basically be like you're playing the anime. But the way I was doing it, which is, you know, just take it at my own pace, I just saw a lot of the cracks come through. But It does make some good quality of life changes. The original game was really difficult to work out when and where you were supposed to do certain things. I finished the first game about 8 hours too early because I didn't realize you had to send a specific text at a specific point.
So the interactions are based on what? You're making decisions every now and then?
Yeah, very rarely though.
Right.
You sometimes get text messages and you can reply to those and you'll get some like bonus text messages that don't have any impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then at specific points in the new version, the game will just stop entirely and it'll say, this is your choice now. You have a binary choice between these two things. And then that will send you off on a specific path.
Okay.
So it's very limited in what you can choose to do. But in the original game, those big choices never came up. You either got your phone out and did a text when the game said, I should text this person, or you didn't. And then you completely missed that, and you got the worst ending, and everything goes to hell. And it's like, oh, I didn't want any of this to happen, and now I'm very sad. Which is my experience. So I like the new sort of changes to that. And also, if you have played the game before, you can fast forward through everything from the very beginning. So if you just want to get to specific parts, you can just zip through the whole game in about half an hour.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. The one thing I would say is it's stupidly expensive.
Really?
So on Switch, on the UK store, I believe it is £53. And you have to consider that this game came out 4 years ago on the Vita and can now be bought for about like a tenner
and
for
it
the
is
original version.
Effectively and a thing you watch and rarely actually play.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. And if you don't mind the old visuals, then you could just get that. Or you could watch the anime on Netflix and you won't be able to make any choices, but you'll see sort of the best route, as it were.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
The intended path of the game. And, you know, you could just sit there and watch it. And it's included as part of your Netflix subscription.
How odd.
It's on Vita and mobile, the original version, so you could just play it like that. But if you really want to check out the new visuals and you've never played Steins Gate before, I would recommend getting the Elite version. Probably not at that price, though, because it is ridiculously expensive for what you're actually getting.
Hang on for a sale, then.
Yeah.
Also, we didn't mention it in the news, but RIP the Vita.
Yeah, of course.
Production winding down in Japan, isn't it? They're stopping manufacturing them.
It's just end of an era.
It really is. The console that I never had, but always kind of wanted. And I know a lot of people are still huge fans of that thing. They never did well, the Sony consoles. I still have my PSP. You know what? They are cool consoles. There is something about them that I like. Certainly just from a build and aesthetic quality and...
Mm.
They had my nice Wipeout games on them, and they never did the business they wanted them to. But, you know, that's a bit of a shame. I just feel like with this happening now, it really is just... Sony clearly have no plans for another portable console.
No.
And so it's basically just them going, yeah, you know what, Nintendo, you go. You just do it. We're going to... If we do anything, I reckon it's going to be like mobile tie-in.
Yeah.
Directly. We'll just make our games work on mobile and we're just going to give up on this dedicated handheld console market because we can't crack it. And with Nintendo doing the Switch, which just basically does everything. Although, I'm hearing more and more from people now that even though the Switch is technically a dual console, as mm-hmm. in you can use it handheld and you can dock it, the majority of people don't even use the docking facility. It's just a portable console to them.
Yeah.
Is that how you feel it?
I play it a lot more portably, even if I'm just sat around in my house. Like, I will still just play it on the smaller screen rather than put it on the TV. I don't know why. It just feels nice and right in that kind of form.
That's what I hear from everybody. They're like, yeah, I never even plug it into the TV. Like, they almost forget it can do that. Which is interesting, because that was the big selling feature. And maybe some households do use it, and it's great, but everyone I know just treats it like a great, big, nice DS.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much.
But yeah, all right then. So maybe pick up Steins Gate on the cheap. Now, a couple of things from last week that I didn't cover because we hadn't done the review yet and they'd only just come out. Spicy Piggy and Boost Buddies, which are kind of akin. So they are both 16-bit style platform games, which are very, very difficult in different ways. Spicy Piggy is an auto-running side-scroller where you go from left to right, take control of the pig in question, and you have to do jumps, jump over all the usual platforming obstacles, spikes, and all that business. You can wall jump if you run into a wall. It's got that, you know, Rayman thing where it just constantly runs and then tap, tap, tap.
Oh, cool.
You'll change direction for half a second and then spin around and keep going the way you was going. Left to right. You collect chilies as you go, and these chilies allow you to unlock checkpoints. For this is a Nitrome game, and they like doing that do you want to unlock the checkpoint with the things you've collected, or do you want to watch a little ad and that'll unlock the checkpoint? The other thing you can do is you can fire little fireballs out of his piggy mouth, and you'll need to do that in order to A, take down some enemies, and B, bust through some barriers, which are coloured orange. This is really good, really tough. It's like a hardcore platformer, so it's very deliberately challenging, and you have to be pixel perfect in your jumps and time everything, and you will die repeatedly and swear lots. But it's good. I rate this. I think it's a lot of fun. Really nicely animated. The worlds change as you go through. And it doesn't feel like you're being gatekept away from anything. And even though I've made it through like three of the worlds, I really need to go back through them and get the 3 stars because it's really tough. Because one star you get just for completing. Another one you get it for completing within a set time. Mm-hmm. And the other one I think is collecting all the chilies. And those last two, in both cases, are really tough. So lots of replayability, good stuff. Spicy Piggy is the name of that one for free. And Boost Buddies, which is a 16-bit pixel art style platformer, which is really, really hard. But this one goes up. So it's like a single screen affair where the screen scrolls up a little bit. But you start at the bottom. You are a cat in a box.
Nice.
Cat in a box with a rocket booster.
Sold.
Exactly. And it's kind of got a Flappy Bird thing where it's just like you tap the screen and it goes and fires a little burst into the air. The box shoots up and then gradually falls back down to earth again. And so you just tap the screen, and if you repeatedly tap, you'll just shoot upwards and effectively be flying up the screen. That's it. That's all you can do. You can't move left, you can't move right, nothing. So what you'll have is a crown at the top of the screen, and you need to get to the crown, but in the way will be a bunch of obstacles. So you might have some kind of like swinging saw blade, so you have to time it to dodge the blade, or there might be a bunch of spinning saw bands which are running around the screen on a set track, and again, you have to time it so you just miss them. There'll be moving platforms, things that ricochet left to right, and you have to find the gap in between. Loads of spikes, there'll be enemies, they'll pop up, you get chased by ghosts, some of them are massive ghosts, and then they start to mix and match between these different types of enemies. It's different every time. The idea on one mode of the game is that you have to build a chain, so you need to collect one crown and then immediately you're into a new level, and you're just trying to see how many crowns you can collect as the levels get tougher and tougher and tougher. And then at the end of it, you'll be able to maybe unlock a new character, a new little kitty cat thing who's now a unicorn cat in a box, and the screen turns into rainbows. Isn't it lovely? There's also another game mode, which is just like playing through more set levels. Both are really fun. Like, the timing is very, very specific. Again, like Flappy Bird, it's like keeping it hovering in one spot. Mm. So you might go into the middle of like a circle of spinning chainsaw things. And the idea is to find the gap, and then you have to hover in the middle and wait for it to turn and turn and turn until the gap is at the top of the screen so you can then shoot out again. And it's about, you know, very, very small space to time the taps perfectly so you don't accidentally bounce a millimeter too high and hit one of the chainsaws and die instantly. It's good. It's really challenging. And because it's a bit roguelike-y, the levels change every time. Both of them are free, and I think both of them are really good examples of this, like, you know, pixel art, easy mobile gameplay, pick up for a few minutes or play it for half an hour thing. I recommend both of them. So yeah, Spicy Piggy, Boost Buddies, go and have a look at those. There's another thing that you had a look at, was there?
I did, yes.
Oh God, yeah, I know what I've done now. All right,
you just,
all right.
You opened this can of worms.
Rick's Perv Corner. What's going on in Rick's Perv Corner today, Rick?
So this week it was, well, this game came out last week, but it is a Neko Para Volume 2.
Neko, if I Google this, Rick,
you are going to be just...
Do I have to open incognito to do this?
Yes.
Oh, for God's sake. You're a monster.
I've been really interested in this because I've noticed a bunch of sort of, let's call it what it is, softcore porn appearing on the Switch.
And what's the name of it? Neko Para what?
Neko Para Volume 2.
Volume 2, okay.
I mean, the Neko Para games are always pretty...
Oh, it's all one word with a K, I see it. Okay. Yeah. 10 out of 10 on Steam, Rick. 7,398 reviews from
perverts.
Fellow perverts. Okay.
So it's a game entirely based around... It's a visual novel, again. I've been playing a lot of those recently. And this time you are the owner of a bakery, and all the staff are cat girls who are inexplicably attractive and also inexplicably attracted to you. And also they might be in some way... sort of your foster children?
Oh. Top review on Steam, incidentally, is just Sorry, Mum.
So, yeah, I had to play it just to find out how bad it can get. It gets pretty bad.
I'm just going to say, no, you didn't. But carry on.
Professional curiosity. This is my curse as a reviewer.
Sure. Blame the job. I do reviews. I didn't play this game.
One day I'll make you.
So how is this different? I have played the erotic style Eroji games before. Mm-hmm. I've played some of the visual novels and everything. Does this differ in any way from those, apart from the slightly incestuous thing? Or is it
essentially the same old visual novel style thing. The characters in it are animated. Okay. Very slightly. So they will move about and move their mouths as they talk and stuff. So that makes it slightly more interesting than your standard visual novel where everything's just static images.
Yeah.
But other than that, yes, this is basically just a sexy game. Visual novel. You read through the text. There are no choices to make. Somehow, eventually, one of the cat girls says, I'm really attracted to you. And you go, oh, okay, I didn't see this one coming, apparently. And then you have sex with them. But because this is the Switch and this is Nintendo, it has been heavily toned down.
I'll bet, yeah.
There are no explicit sex scenes or anything like that. I did check on... I happen to also own it on PC.
Oh my God.
So I quickly had a run through on that to double check if it was any more toned down. It is slightly more toned down than that. So characters who were previously naked but you couldn't see anything apart from their shoulders, they are wearing oversized shirts, which cover basically everything.
Gotcha.
So there is absolutely no nudity. Most of what happens in it is just suggestive foreplay, for lack of a better phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not the most comfortable game to be playing on a train, as I was, surrounded by other people on one of those table seats. That was a bad move, cool. But it was funny.
I'm not anti this stuff in principle. I'm not down to yuck anyone's yum, because it's all good, provided no one's being hurt or objectified in a hideous way, which is where I think some of this stuff does cross over into bad territory for me, in terms of just like women who look incredibly young, too young a lot of the time, and that's when it starts getting. And again, this is a huge part of the anime culture, is the anime characters, they do draw them looking young. Everybody looks youthful. No one ever looks old in anime, but they're definitely playing that up sometimes. I'm not saying this one is, because I haven't seen it, but there is that stuff where it's like, it crosses into some weird territory that I'm less cool with.
Yeah.
And I don't think is good for people and women in general.
Mm.
I have to have a hesitancy, which is why I really liked Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yes.
Which I finished and played through, because it starts trying to make you think it's going to be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then it bait and switches you and it goes terribly horrible.
I need to play that. I've heard so many good things. I know.
This is for you, man. I know. I know. For you.
I know, but I'm worried about it, you know?
When I play it, it's good. Because it's a bait and switch. And, and it does it very, very effectively. And it goes to some really interesting, weird places and catches you very off guard. I knew it was going to be a bait and switch, but I didn't look at any images. And it still, you know, caught me off, because it took a while to get going. And I was like, have I just been tricked into playing another Orochi game? But it's free. Everyone have a look at that. That's a really good example of like unpacking the genre to some degree, you know?
Yeah.
And highlighting some issues with it, I think. So I think that's quite good. But Nekopara Volume 2, how much is this?
I believe it's £16, I think.
£16.
Which isn't too bad.
It's £7 on Steam at the moment.
Even better.
I found that. So there you go.
Would you
rate it as one of these? Is it a good example of this kind of game?
No.
No?
Okay. The plot itself is so loose and limp. It is literally just a series of setups that eventually, build your relationship with this character and then, you sleep with them. Okay. There's no other, interesting parts to other than that. So how much enjoyment you'll get out of it is based on how much you like the idea of having sex with cat girls. That is all I can really say on the matter.
Well, for an Eroji game, I would say loose and limp are two of the most damning adjectives you could possibly use. So there's our review.
And on that note.
I'm going to get the pronunciation of this right. So Shikondo is a vertically scrolling shmup that you can get on your iOS device at the minute. I don't know if it's on Android.
It is.
But this caught me off guard because I like shmups. Shmups are good, and usually you take control of a manned spaceship and you're constantly blasting through waves and waves and waves of plasma balls flying at your face and then taking on giant mechs and stuff like that usually. This is still a vertically scrolling shmup with loads of plasma, but it's more like, hey, you're taking control of these old-fashioned feudal-style Japanese samurai-slash-witch characters, I guess. And all the enemies you're fighting are floating people and jinns, you know, that kind of crazy looking white face with that big smiley face. You're kind of fighting those that are floating around and you're zooming over what look like very painterly backgrounds like you'd get out of books of the age and stuff. So it's not quite what you think. Mechanically, it's the same. You're still dragging your thumb around on the screen and blasting the crap out of everything. You collect these, I guess, fire pockets, these white flame bursts, which then charge up and then you can unlock a big old flame attack at the end of it. And then you hit the bosses and it does that classic warning when, you know, a boss is about to appear. And it's the bosses that made me go, hello, what's going on here? Because the bosses are really, really weird contortions of anatomy. And so it's the first boss was this big lassie who's body kind of folds in half and you're kind of being attacked by her pelvis at one point while she like looms over the side. I was like, okay, not what I was expecting. And then the second boss is this lassie who's kind of like double bent over backwards, so she's like walking on her hands,
right,
with her head upside down. I was like, suddenly it's gone all like Japanese horror show, which I quite liked. But I don't know about the game itself. It feels a little bit unpolished. It feels like rough at the edges where... Right. You get that sense that the 2D sprites are kind of being dragged around a background.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel very fluid. It doesn't feel like the characters have any animus. But yeah, it had some weird art design choices that I kind of approved of. I didn't rate the actual shmup of it all too well. And I don't know. It didn't feel great to me. I don't know how much this one costs. And I've played it for about 45 minutes or so. Could probably do with more before we do a review or anything, of course.
I think it's about £3.
That's £3?
Or $3, okay, yeah.
Fair enough. But Shikondo is the name of that one if you want to give it a look. And finally, Pipe Push Paradise, which is a puzzle game where you take control of a lassie who's placed on a little map on an island, and it's effectively gridded. And the idea is that you'll see the end of a pipe going into the ground on one end of the map and the end of another somewhere at the other end. And you're given a piece of piping and you have to push it around the level and then connect it between those two things to connect the full pipe working system, and suddenly the water will flow and there you've completed the level. So you're just plugging gaps in piping, basically. Think the little block moving mini game in the original BioShock.
Yeah.
Like that. But instead of you doing it, just moving the blocks around, you're physically, you've got a person that you're controlling. This is rough. It really feels like, I don't know if it's a deliberate art style that it's supposed to look like it's been drawn in, not in chalk, that's what I'm going to say. But the art's kind of nasty, and the way that the puzzle stuff works is inconsistent to me. So, for example, you've got straight pipes, which you just can plug in and move and roll, but you can't change the orientation of them. So if a pipe is going laid horizontally across the screen, you can just push it up or push it to the left or whatever, but you can't switch it so it's moving vertically. However, you'll find a pipe that's kind of bent at a 90-degree angle, so it's like a corner joint. And if you push that one from the side, if you push it one block, it will kind of flip up. So like you're rolling it. So if you push it one tile, the end will kind of go up so it's pointing to the sky. And then you push it again and it'll go bdoof back down on the other side. So you can actually change it from being a bend that goes upwards and to the left, from being a 90-degree angle that goes upwards and to the right. Mm-hmm. And that'll be necessary for fitting it into a particular pipe. But if you try and do that from the bottom and go, well, okay, I want to do it the other way, it doesn't work.
Right.
It only works left to right, not up down, when really, theoretically, you should be able to do the same thing, just pushing from the bottom up the screen and roll it over so that it changes the angle the other way. But it doesn't do that. And so for me, like, the solutions to the puzzles seem inconsistent with the rules that they've set up. So it speaks to me that the whole thing's a little bit rough at the edges, and I don't really think it's very good. So I'm not going to be recommending that one. But it is out if you want to take a look on all the mobile platforms. Okay. Let's knock it on the head. Thank you all for listening to us this week, prattling on like we did. And come back next week. We'll do more video game chatter, as always. Thank you, Rick, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's always a good time.
And we will see you next week for more of the same. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.